listening to the Bob Duco Show. I want to remind you our phone lines are still open to call in and sponsor these children through Compassion International. So if you haven't done it yet, call now. It's $38 a month, and you can call here, and Keith is ready to answer your call off air in the studio. Call us right now, 877-8282-BOB. Sponsor one of these kids, okay? Right now, spending our last few minutes with Islamic historian Raymond Ibrahim, talking about his latest book, Defenders of the West, The Christian Heroes Who Stood Against Islam. And so, Raymond, let's talk about some of the eight people that you highlight. First of all, the eighth person that you bring up is probably the most well-known to your average layperson, and probably a little bit surprising. Look, we all know that there are, that mythological characters tend to go back to an original source of a real-life person, right? Santa Claus, we can trace back to the Bishop of Myra. Most people don't know that Bela Lugosi and Dracula actually goes back to this Vlad the Impaler. But some people know that, but they don't necessarily know the connection between Vlad, who he was, and battling Islam. Tell us a little bit about him, if you would.
Sure, Bob. So, yeah, as you point out, he's probably the most controversial, surprising, and shocking character that I included. But I did that for actually reasons that we've touched upon, which is how he has been so distorted in the modern era. You know, he was Vlad the Impaler, so that's accurate enough, and it's bad enough, and we can look at that. Mm-hmm. But now he's, of course, become this fluttering, undead, vampire, right, and all that. So Vlad basically is from Wallachia, and this is where Romania is today, so he would be Romanian. And, you know, he fought. The thing about Vlad and what I discuss is, first, he was actually, his is a tragic story. He was actually taken as a hostage because his father was essentially the voivode or warlord of the region in Wallachia. And he was kept under by the Turks and the Muslims. And that's actually where he learned about impalement, because it was the Turks who actually thrived on impaling their enemy. So he learned it. He watched it there. Eventually, he broke free from them, became his own leader in his own country, very nationalistic, very patriotic in that sense, very Christian. And that's the surprising part, probably, when you look at his letters and the reason that he turned on the Turks. He could have actually worked with them, and as many Christians of the time did, but he actually turned on them. And according to the sources, it was for his faith and trying to work with Hungary, which at the time, of course, was the shield of Christendom, fighting the Turks and so forth. But, you know, he constantly got betrayed. He was a very severe personality, and he did engage in impalement. But the way I describe it and the way I understand it, he was fighting fire against fire. That's the only way, as he saw it, to actually retaliate and respond to what the Turks were doing, which was, and you got to keep in mind at this time, the Christians are disunited as usual. And you have the Orthodox and your Catholics. You don't have Protestants at this point yet in time. This is the early 15th century. And so it's 1400s. And the Turks are just, it's a massive war machine that at any given time can just muster up to 150,000 men and march them anywhere. And all these men that I discussed, most of them, when they would face those odds with, 10% of the amount of fighters, including Vlad the Impaler. But his is a very heroic story, and what he did in trying to rebuff and get the Turks out of his country, and he succeeded. Then he was betrayed. Then he was released again. And so really his story is very dramatic, and that's what I think Bram Stoker in the early 1900s, or was it late 1800s, I believe, early 1900s, wrote his famous novel, based very, very loosely based. He had enemies who created early tracts, and this is at the time of the Gutenberg Press had just come out, and he was one of the first. He was actually one of the first examples of what's today called fake news, because his enemies really exaggerated his, his cruelties, and he was cruel. I'm not arguing that, but you have to see him in the time and place and the context and understand everyone was doing the same sorts of things. But he was demonized, and that's actually what led to the later rendering of this blood-sucking evil monster that we know as Dracula.
Yeah. So safe to say he probably didn't sleep in a coffin and say, good evening. And would be very interesting to go back in a time machine and see some of these original sources. Okay, of the other seven, you have some people that may be known. You have Sid, okay, the El Cid movie, of course. We have Richard the Lionhearted. So there are some very loose connections some people may recognize. But for the most part, I think most people are going to go, who? So what is it about these other seven that stood out to you? And is there anybody in particular that in our last couple of minutes you'd like to highlight?
Yeah, so I, you know, when picking these eight men, you know, first I wanted to include a lot more, and there's certainly no dearth of men that I could include. But some of the considerations were, you know, if there was enough primary sources written about them to do justice in a full, lengthy chapter. Most of these chapters are about 30 or so pages. But also, all of these men, basically, what I found in them is they were very faithful. They believed in their religion, their God. They were willing to do anything. A lot of these men, including the ones that, as you say, are unknown, were actually kings, or at least dukes and nobles, and very royal, and they had a lot to gain by not actually entering into the fray. Most of these men actually died very early, in their 40s and 50s, even though they could have lived, you know, happy, prosperous lives in their kingdom. So that's unlike my other book, Sword and Scimitar, where I looked at eight decisive battles between Christians and the West. How I term this book is I look at eight decisive men. And so they don't necessarily have to have succeeded. One of these, Louis the Ninth, better known as St. Louis, was really an abysmal failure in what he did. But he's so, you know, revered and venerated and loved, especially by, including by secular France. He's usually counted as one of the, you know, the greatest kings of France, precisely because he was so self-sacrificing in his attempt to right the wrongs that Islam was doing to Christians. Right. And so he, you know, he sacrificed in that sense. So I think you will see the common thread of a certain religiosity that is often denied in today, especially if you watch these men in Hollywood movies, and a very impressive, you know, self-sacrifice and courage that, again, this is very much missing in general culture today.
Right. I'll tell you, it's a very interesting book, folks. Look for it. It's called Defenders of the West: The Christian Heroes Who Stood Against Islam. Look for it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever you get your books. It's the latest from Raymond Ibrahim. His website, RaymondIbrahim.com. And Raymond, we appreciate your time today. Very interesting discussion. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thanks very much, Bob. Very happy to be with you.
Thank you. Take care now. We're going to do Stump the Apologist again.